All right, well, it is 7 o'clock. Folks, my name is Andrew Crocker. I teach political science at OTC, the OTC Social Science Department, and student organization Politically Active. Would like to welcome our speakers, who we'll introduce in a moment, and the audience for this forum about the Medicaid expansion ballot initiative coming up August 4th. This is a shared goal of educating voters that has brought together a coalition of community organizations to host a series of forums to engage candidates and voters before the August and November elections, such as the Be Civil, Be Heard program, Drury University's L.E. Metter Center for Politics and Citizenship, Junior League of Springfield, Leadership Springfield, League of Women Voters of Southwest Missouri, Missouri State University's Public Affairs Office, NAACP Springfield, Ozarks Technical Community College's Political Science Department, Ozarks Public Broadcasting and KSMU Radio, and Springfield Green County Library District. OTC is hosting a forum this week. You are listening to it right now and watching it for those of you that are directly with us right now. Our partner organizations will be hosting other forums for other races in the general election and ballot issues in the coming weeks. Please tune in for those. We have a primary election before November, a primary election to determine who will be running in the general election this coming August 4th. And of course, we have the critical issue that we'll be discussing today, whether Missouri should expand Medicaid. We hope that you're with us right now because you are an engaged citizen and you are begging for the opportunity to vote. For anybody else who's out there who might not fall into that category, we strongly encourage you to vote. Feel free to contact any of the organizations I mentioned before, and of course, your county clerk's office for information as to how and where to vote. No part of this video may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic or mechanical, without the written permission of the copyright holder. Copyright 2020 by Leadership Springfield, all rights reserved. Let's take a moment to introduce our participants in today's Medicaid discussion. We have Steve Edwards of Cox Health. He will be joining us arguing for the expansion of Medicaid, yes on two. Then we have Dr. Bob Onder, who's a state senator from the great state of Missouri, of course, in the 2nd District in the area of St. Charles. He will be arguing for no on two. All right, well, welcome aboard, folks. I'm going to start us off by having both of us, give an opening statement. And Dr. Bob Onder, go ahead. You have 2 minutes for an opening statement.
Well, thank you, Andrew. Thanks for allowing me to participate in this forum this evening. As Missouri voters, as we consider Amendment 2 on the August 4th ballot, we need to ask ourselves a few questions. First, do we really want to go further down the road of expanding a broken, socialized healthcare system along the lines of Bernie Sanders? Do we want to indebt our children and our grandchildren? Do we know where this money is going to come from to do an Obamacare Medicaid expansion? Conservatively, this will cost $350 million a year, $3.5 billion over the next decade. Already, Governor Parson has had to make three rounds of withholdings from our state budget, $133 million out of K-12 education. The money can only come from two places, either existing programs, including education, roads, public safety, existing Medicaid programs for the truly vulnerable, or from massive tax increases. There are no other options. Now, it is downright false to say that money grows on trees, that expansion of this welfare program will somehow pay for itself. Governor Cuomo has blamed New York's multi-billion dollar budget deficit on Medicaid expansion and said it's not sustainable. The average state that has expanded Medicaid has seen cost overruns of 157%. And remember, this expansion is for able-bodied working age adults who, if we expand Medicaid, have private insurance that they will be forced off of. 60% have private insurance that they will be forced off of into dependency on a government program. Missourians cannot afford Amendment 2. Missouri should not double down on a dysfunctional program to the detriment of our schools, our roads, public safety, and those who truly need our help the most. Vote no on 2.
Dr. Onder, thank you so much for that introduction. Steve Edwards, you have the floor. You have the floor for a 2-minute introduction. And Steve, I am so sorry for interrupting. You are currently muted.
Okay, I think you can, hopefully you can hear me now. So if before you start the clock, if I could just thank Dr. Onder for joining us from St. Louis to help inform us on pros and cons of this. I respected you as a senator, and you've actually worked with my wife in special education needs, and so she told me to be nice to you. And so thank you, Senator Onder, we appreciate it. So I want to begin by quoting Brent Schaefer, who's the CEO of Cerner, one of our more prominent Missouri corporations, on his advocacy for expansion. He said the COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted the intersection of public health, the Missouri economy, and the overall well-being of our state in an unprecedented fashion. It has caused us to think more deeply about our healthcare, of our families, and the community we live and work. And I see that more today than ever, that our economy and our health and well-being are so much tied together. I'm a lifelong fiscal conservative, and I'm voting to expand Medicaid, yes on two. What and who? So expansion is about people that are making 21% of the poverty line. That's about $4,500 for a family of three. It's about working poor. It's about expanding resources for those that have been our essential workers during this pandemic, in many ways the most vulnerable among us. Who pays for it? It's a 90% federal match from the federal government. Missourians have been taxed for us from the very beginning of ACA. We've already paid these taxes. We've left $8 billion on the table. And as a conservative person, I want our Missouri money back in our state. Economic studies show, counter to Dr. Onder's position, that it's favorable to the state budget. Who supports it? Very long list of advocacy groups for the most vulnerable, churches, the Catholic Church included, and the most prominent voices in our business community. So the Missouri Chamber, the Kansas City, St. Louis, and Springfield Chambers all support this. It's been passed by 37 states already, 20 Democratic states, Democratic governors, and 17 GOP governors. It appears to be a nonpartisan issue. And to me, the most powerful thing is if 37 states have made this happen with their budget, and in almost every case, they can argue their budget's improved, I think Missouri can do it too. We can expand Medicaid, take care of our most vulnerable, and help our economy at the same time.
Thank you so much for that opening statement. Now, this is a forum, not a debate. It will be a civil conversation between our participants who will engage in respectful conversation about this issue. The forum is going to be the remainder of this hour, and it'll be recorded and posted on websites. We'll give you those website addresses at the conclusion of the forum. These questions have been submitted by partner organizations, and the candidates' names were randomly drawn, which means Dr. Onder, just time around, will be going first. Of course, now you've both learned, I'll be showing flashing you signs of 30-second warnings and when, of course, your time is up. There will be no opportunity for rebuttal, but you are welcome to use your last two-minute closing statement to address or clarify anything brought up earlier in the statement. First question is for Dr. Onder. The health problems of patients and families are almost always accompanied by financial stress and strains. As citizens of a state, this one, where 20% of the population has medical debt in collections, we have a moral obligation to make healthcare more affordable and accessible. Dr. Onder, you have 2 minutes.
Sure. You know, I think your questioner brought up really one of the most crucial questions in healthcare today, which is how do we make healthcare less expensive, more affordable? Or to put it another way, what has contributed to the skyrocketing cost of healthcare? And I have to say that Marty McCary, in an excellent book called The Price We Pay, documented in detail, in painful detail, just the extent to which hospitals rip us off as American healthcare consumers. You know, take and think of just the tax subsidies that we give to our healthcare companies. Take Cox Health, 6 hospitals, 80 physician clinics, and outpatient facilities. Think of the value of that massive tax exemption from real estate taxes, from personal property taxes, from income taxes. That subsidy is worth tens of millions of dollars. And hospitals are given this exemption because they're supposed to be nonprofits, but they don't act like nonprofits. While hospitals around the state are laying off phlebotomists and orderlies and nurses and physicians, they pay their CEOs like Steve Edwards $1,932,000 a year. The CEO of Ascension Healthcare in St. Louis makes $13 million a year. And what about that free care they're supposed to deliver? Well, it's been documented time and time again by nonprofits that hospitals, so-called nonprofit CEOs, don't do their federally required share of nonprofit care. And just try not paying your bills. More personal bankruptcies are caused by hospital bills than by casinos and drug dealers and loan sharks put together. Nonprofit hospitals are coming to Missouri saying, we want to do even less charity care by making the taxpayers pick up the tab in the form of an Obamacare Medicaid expansion. That's not right.
Thank you so much. Steve, same question. Once again, the health problems of patients and families are, you know, we are in a state with 20% of the population has medical debt and collections. Do we have a moral obligation to make healthcare more affordable, accessible?
Yes, yeah, so we at Cox Health, I can give that example, we could cut our prices by about 70%+ if just one thing happened. Everyone paid their bill. And so what happens in healthcare, because of the high burden of Medicare, Medicaid, and uninsured shortfalls, there's cost shifting that goes on. And so we charge those that have insurance more to make up for the bottom line. Cox Health, in the last 5 years, our most profitable year has been a 3% margin. That's 3 pennies on a dollar. We're very much dedicated to serving our community. We have not laid off any employees. We're absolutely committed to that. And through this difficult time of the pandemic, we have not. I wish I made how much money Bob Onder said I do, but I don't. So you might double check your W-2, or at least my wife needs to check that. We're absolutely committed to serving our community. If more people had access to care, costs would go down, because many of our patients have to wait to an acute crisis before they seek care. Instead of going to primary care offices and getting the care that's preventative, they have to wait too late because they don't have insurance. They show up in the ERs uninsured, which is a burden for everyone, especially their family.
Mr. Edwards, the next question is for you. Because of COVID-19, the Missouri budget has had to cut services that many see as essential. Why not wait to expand Medicaid until the state budget's healthier?
You know, so if you look at the data on this, there's been two important studies, one done by Washington University, which Dr. Onder and I both attended, and one done through Missouri Foundation. Both forecast a positive budget impact. The Missouri Foundation one looks at a $2.6 billion overall economic impact to our state, about 16,000 new jobs. 79% of those jobs would be outside of healthcare. 90% of them would be more than $15 a person. So the time is now, because we've, in a pandemic, you realize that it's so important that people have access to care. Imagine a worker who's afraid to lose their job, who shows up with symptoms and could further transmit the spread. And our economy needs a boost. We have not turned down any federal funds for highways, any federal matching funds for anything else at a 50% match. This is a 90% match to serve the most vulnerable in our population. They need it right now because our community is very vulnerable.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Onder, same question. The budget has had to cut services. Missouri's had to cut services during this crisis. Why not wait to expand Medicaid until the state budget's healthier?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that's a very good point. The governor has just made his third rounds of withholdings from the budget. The last withholding was over $400 million. $133 million of that was from K-12 education. Higher education always takes a huge cut. And, you know, regarding roads, we're just not going to have the money for roads, for law enforcement, for public safety. And if we get into a budget shortfall because we have been reckless and expanded Medicaid, we're going to have to cut other Medicaid programs for the truly vulnerable. No, money doesn't grow on trees. The average Medicaid expansion state has gone over budget by 153%. Again, the Governor Cuomo has blamed millions of dollars of New York's debt on Medicaid expansion. The idea that somehow this expansion pays for itself, it's just nonsense.
Thank you so much for that. Let's stay with you, Dr. Onder. Once again, this is a question for both of you. Starting with Dr. Onder, expanding Medicaid would expand healthcare to rural areas of our state. Does Medicaid expansion have the potential to contribute to more equity in delivery of healthcare throughout the state?
Well, yes. I think what we need to understand is that Missouri has 72 rural hospitals. About 45% of Missouri's hospitals are in rural Missouri. And in the last decade, four rural hospitals have closed, one out of 20. Now, rural hospitals have problems staying afloat in every state, and rural hospitals have closed in Medicaid expansion states too. The two biggest problems for rural hospitals are, one, there are fewer people living in rural Missouri than there were 70 years ago when the Hill-Burton Act incentivized the opening of hospitals. But secondly, and probably more importantly, those 72 rural hospitals are competing with the 92 big city hospitals and universities for the most profitable business: orthopedic surgery, joint replacements, cancer care, obstetrics, radiation therapy. In fact, the state has encouraged this trend with the idea of certified centers of excellence like stroke centers and heart centers. And big hospital systems like Cox and BJC and Mercy and the universities have aggressively marketed the perception that care at Cox or at the university or at BJC is better than the care you would get from your local rural hospital. So yes, there are problems with equity, but I think if anything, it's because the city hospitals, the hospital systems like Cox, like BJC, have been so successful at competing against their rural brothers and sisters that are responsible for a lot of those rural hospital problems. One final point: to the extent that the Medicaid expansion population, 60% of that population has private insurance and they're going to be forced off of that insurance, to the extent that that private insurance pays better than Medicaid, I think many rural hospitals will be sorely disappointed that they might come out behind at the end of the day should we make the reckless mistake of passing Amendment 2.
Thank you so much. Mr. Edwards, same question. With rural areas at the forefront of our minds here, would Medicaid expansion have the potential to contribute to more equity in delivery of healthcare throughout the state?
Yeah, so Dr. Andre's right. We have lost hospitals. We've lost 10 or 15 Missouri, depending on what years you look over. Six of the states with the highest hospital closures rate, the first six, are a non-Medicaid expansion state. So it does seem to have an adverse effect on rural hospitals. We know that rural hospitals are often the economic hub of the community. They create jobs, they create workforce development, because few small towns will grow without a hospital. Young people don't want to go into a small town. I don't think if it's a big city hospital. We have hospitals in towns like Lamar, Missouri, which was about to close with 2 days cash on hand. They asked us to help them out. We found efficiencies. We kept them afloat, and that community, I think, is better for it, because with that hospital, they will do better. Hospitals, this isn't in my mind about hospitals, it's about access to care for the uninsured and vulnerable, but it is about workforce and economic development. And as hospitals often lead as the biggest employers in these small towns, it's very critical that we have our hospitals stay afloat, not only for the access to care, but for the economy and the jobs in those areas.
Thank you so much, Mr. Edwards. Let's stay with you for our next question. Our next question, we get 1 minute on, so keep that in mind. There have been cost overruns with Medicaid expansions in other states. A common culprit is that several states have paid out more Medicaid than they should have to perhaps people that shouldn't have traditionally qualified for it. So our question, how do we assure in Missouri that only those who should receive Medicaid do? Mr. Edwards, we'll stay with you.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that. That's an executive office function to make sure that those systems work well and efficiently. And so that's something that Bob Onder and his team and the governor's office have to focus on to make sure that. I will say that before we accept the notion that it's hurtful to these budgets, there's over two dozen studies that say it's helped state budgets. No state has moved away from Medicaid expansion. Montana, in their first year, had a net gain of $50 million their state budget. Virginia last year, in 2019, in their first year, had a $400 million gain to their state budget. So if done well, and I think our Missouri governor, our Missouri House and Senate can make sure we do it right, we won't have those kind of cost overruns. But that's a function of the executive office, and I trust they can do it right.
Thank you so much. Dr. Onder, same question, because I know this is something we're all sensitive to. How do we assure that only those who should receive Medicaid do? This has been a problem with some states that have done Medicaid expansion.
Yeah, Andrew. And not only is that a problem in Medicaid expansion states, it's a problem in other states, but it's a massive problem in Medicaid expansion states. The people who aren't eligible, either because they have moved out of state, they have too high of income, or sometimes they're even dead, the state continues to pay per member per month payments to the Medicaid managed care companies that manage most of these cases. So it's a big problem. Here a couple of years ago in Missouri, we passed, in Illinois, a Medicaid expansion state, 250,000 people were on the rolls that weren't eligible. But I want to address something Steve said. Yes, those states over time, their budgets have increased. That's true of every state. But if you look at specifically the Medicaid part of the state budget, 157% overruns on average. In Illinois, it's over 270%. In Alaska, 85%. In Arkansas, 79%. So it is a myth. These studies are bought and paid for by the Medicaid expansion advocates in the hospital systems. Medicaid will cost money. Money doesn't grow on trees.
Dr. Onder, let's stay with you. And once again, this is a question for both of you guys, because this may be the first time that the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, my apologies, has supported a yes vote on Medicaid expansion. If the measure is passed, what would be the benefits, let's stick with what would be the effects of economic development in Missouri? How would jobs be affected?
Well, Andrew, that's not true. The Missouri Chamber of Commerce has been supporting Medicaid expansion since the year I entered the Senate in 2015. And it's very simple. Hospitals are very large dues-paying members of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, and therefore they have an interest in Medicaid expansion. But I would also point out that the Chamber and other business groups have supported Medicaid expansion because the Medicaid expansion amounts to a massive corporate welfare subsidy to businesses, especially to businesses who employ lower wage workers. So right now, every company in the United States with over 50 workers under the Affordable Care Act has to provide health insurance to their workers. Under Medicaid expansion, they can dump these workers onto Medicaid. And how do they do that? What they do is offer a skinny plan, that's the term in the ACA, a skinny plan that's such a lousy plan that the workers say, well, I'm not going to do that. I am going to go, I'm going to decline my employer insurance and choose Medicaid instead. So what we essentially have is in workers from 100% of federal poverty level up to 400% qualify for generous subsidies on the Obamacare exchanges. So what we have is corporate America unloading their healthcare costs on the taxpayers of the state of Missouri, some of whom are working on very small incomes. It's just not fair.
Mr. Edwards, same question. Once again, Missouri Chamber of Commerce supports this, but if the measure is passed, what would be the effects of economic development in Missouri? How would jobs be affected?
You know, so different than what Dr. Onder believes, I look at the studies that have been by independent nonpartisan groups, Washington University study and one Missouri Foundation for Health, and they go into some pretty good detail about the forecast economic impact, $2.6 billion economic impact to state, 16,000 jobs, 90% of the jobs at $15 or more an hour. One of the other benefits, those states that have expanded have on average a 7% lower premium. And so this cost shift back to companies is lower for sure. It also makes those states more competitive. We're surrounded by Medicaid expansion states. Two of our biggest cities are adjoining other states that either are or could expand. And I look at economic development in our state. And if I'm an employer and I'm looking at an option of being one state or other, I want our state to be more attractive. Remember, this is funded 90% by federal dollars that we've already paid for. Missourians are already taxed for this. And we've turned our nose up to that money and sent it back to other states. And in theory, we sent it to states that are getting more return for from the government's money. So in a sense, we're subsidizing these blue states, the states I'm sure Dr. Onder is most ideologically opposed to. So I think it's really important that we focus on how we develop our state's economy. A rising tide raises all ships. And I think that Medicaid expansion creates jobs, creates a more attractive workplace, work environment.
Mr. Edwards, thank you so much. Let's stay with you, sir. Once again, a question for both of you. There's been reporting over the years, including an article I had read out of 2016 out of Forbes, where the Department of Health and Human Services had reported that Medicaid enrollees under this expansion had been far more expensive than expected. You know, I've fallen behind on my annual reading of HHS budget reports, but this has caused some budgetary problems for some states and maybe even wreaked havoc on some others. So how sure are we of the price tag for this service as we consider voting for it?
Well, I mean, the one variability is that we know that it can probably save the state money in other ways. I want to focus on those. One is it saves costs on traditional Medicaid. So instead of state share being 35%, it's a 10% share. States pay 100% of the medical costs for certain citizens, including people that are inmates. With this program, the state would only have to pay 10% of that share. And then I think there's these important reduced savings associated with uncompensated care. And as we create jobs, we create more state income tax. And so again, I think it saves those things. Will Medicaid costs go up? I imagine they will. Healthcare costs go up. But Medicare costs go up in a lateral line with our economy. So the lower the employment rate, the higher the Medicaid costs. So having good economic strategies in our state ultimately will lower the cost of our state, because these are people, again, that are not people unwilling to work. These are the working poor people that have been serving us right now. And they will get off that, I believe. Their children will get off Medicaid and be a bigger contributor to society.
Thank you so much, Mr. Edwards. Dr. Onder, same question. There's been reporting over the years that, you know, Medicaid enrollees under this expansion have been more expensive than expected. How sure are we of the price tag of this service as we consider voting for it?
Well, you're right, Andrew. These enrollees are more numerous, they are more expensive, they use emergency room care more, they take more opiates than if they stayed on the health insurance, the private insurance that we would be forcing them off of. And yes, it has been a massive problem. On average, the overruns have been 157%. In Missouri, we estimate conservatively that Medicaid expansion would cost $350 million. But I want to address something that I hear over and over again from the expansion advocates, including Steve. Somehow there's this big pot of Missouri federal money out there that we're already paying on, and that other states are using it. That's just not true. Missouri is a net recipient of Medicaid dollars, and the money that's going to be used to fund a Medicaid expansion is going to be money borrowed from China and paid for by our children and our grandchildren. Money does not grow on trees. How are we going to pay for it? And that WashU study is flawed. The garbage in, garbage out, as the computer scientists say.
Let's stay with you, Dr. Onder, because the next question we have feeds directly to what you said, because Missouri residents pay federal taxes that fund Medicaid expansion in other states. According to what we've been adding up, that would mean by 2022, Missourians would have paid $7.3 billion to the federal government to be used by other states that expand their Medicaid programs. You know, why should we not benefit from that money that we pay to the federal government?
No, I mean, I could show you these numbers. They're very, very clear cut. Missouri is one of many states. A little over half the states are net Medicaid recipients. Missouri is already a net Medicaid recipient. And no, there is no pot of Missouri money that's in the federal piggy bank that we could just reach in and grab some of. We are talking about an era in which we have a $3.7 trillion deficit this year, $3.7 trillion deficit, and that's before the next COVID stimulus bill. We have a $26 trillion federal debt. This is money borrowed from China that our kids and our grandkids will be paying for generations. And once again, that WashU study was funded by Medicaid expansion advocates. They put the studies, the assumptions they wanted in to get out the assumptions that they wanted. And it wasn't a study at all. Actually, it was just a white paper. It was an advocacy piece. I place no credibility at all in the WashU study. The WashU study assumes an unrealistically low, apropos your previous question, an unrealistically low cost per enrollee, and it assumes an unrealistically low number of enrollees. So in every state, it has run way over. And it's not just conservative Republicans saying that. Andrew Cuomo questioned whether his Medicaid expansion in New York was sustainable.
Mr. Edwards, your response to that. Once again, Missouri pays federal taxes that fund Medicaid expansion. So why are, you know, so if we pay that to the federal government, why or why not should we benefit from that money that we pay?
Well, first of all, Missouri is not run by like New York is, and I don't like that comparison. I think we're run differently. And actually, I think to people like Dr. Onder, we are run differently. We're a fiscally conservative state. One of the things that's important to recognize is when you look at the total federal income tax that Missouri residents pay into the federal government and the amount of federal money we get back, we are a net negative in that. So when you look at the whole picture, we're a negative state. Other states are a positive. So we're not getting our share back. I think it's the responsibility of our state leaders to make sure Missouri gets their share. I'm a Missourian. I'm an American first, but I'm very close to Missouri, and I think Missouri should get its share. Now, you referenced the $3.7 trillion debt, and somehow by us turning down this money, maybe we could fix that. So let's put it in perspective. $1 billion is about the amount of federal money that would come to Missouri, and with a $3.7 trillion debt, that will take 3,700 years to pay off. So I really don't think from a practical perspective that we're going to save the debt problem with Missouri. Instead, we're helping other states to the detriment of our most vulnerable citizens, our most vulnerable people.
Mr. Edwards, let's stay with you. Once again, this goes back to both of you. And I do want to encourage folks, really, if you are listening along, be aggressive here. Go straight to chat. If there is a question on this issue you are dying to hear from, you couldn't find two better panelists to contribute to that answer. So please get your questions in. We will read them. Mr. Edwards, 38 states, such as deeply Republican ones, as Idaho, Utah, and so on, others, they've adopted Medicaid expansion. And other Republican states, states primarily voting Republican, have adopted, though not yet implemented it yet, such as Oklahoma and Nebraska. Why does Medicaid expansion meet such staunch opposition in Missouri?
You know, I think it has a lot to do with the political climate that we've been in since the Obama election. We're a conservative state. I mean, our citizens aren't as conservative as our legislature is. Our legislature is very strongly conservative. Obamacare was something that didn't go over well for many Republicans. This seems to be a residual of that. Most states have got over it when they looked at the budget consequences. Even Oklahoma passed it, as you said, just recently. 38 states have passed it. It just makes sense economically, financially. I often come to it from the perspective of trying to take care of patients that are most vulnerable in our community. And that's where most of my perspective comes from. But also, know the math matters. Our state needs the support. It needs the stimulus money. And to give you a reference, we received $2.6 billion in CARES Act funding in our state. We didn't hesitate to take it. $1.6 billion is sitting in county coffers. In our 14-county area, not a single dollar has been distributed. There's another $1 billion that's still sitting in the state treasury that's not been distributed. If you wonder about how to pay for this, there's $2.6 billion out there sitting unattended that could help this and upstart our economy and take care of some vulnerable people during the middle of a pandemic.
Thank you so much, Mr. Edwards. Dr. Onder, of course, the same question. We've had a lot of states, 38 states in total, but also a fair number of Republican states have voted to adopt Medicaid expansion. Why does Medicaid expansion seem to meet such staunch opposition in Missouri, in your opinion?
Thank you. Good question. Missouri has not expanded Medicaid because we are the show me state, and we don't buy this idea that we should have a Bernie Sanders, Nancy Pelosi style expansion of the welfare state. We don't believe that money grows on trees, and we know that a Medicaid expansion will be a budget buster. It will be great for hospitals that want to build a new wing. It will be great for the 25 St. Louis hospital CEOs who make an average of $3.3 million each, according to the St. Louis Business Journal. And earlier I cited an IRS Form 990. Maybe Steve should have his accountants at Cox amend their form. But this is not great. It is not great for the 60% of the Medicaid expansion population who will be forced off of their health care because their employers will drop their health care or because they'll be forced off of their individual plan. And it is not great for the school children who will have their state funding cut because we have spent all this money. It will be not great for our roads and our bridges in rural Missouri. And it will not be great for those folks who are the most vulnerable on Medicaid, who will need to go back and look at some of their services. Remember, Governor Jay Nixon, because of tough budget times, had to withhold Medicaid dental. There is not an unlimited pot of money. And the studies that suggest that somehow money grows on trees, somehow it'll all pay for itself. That's what's said about every welfare program. We haven't expanded in Missouri because we're the show me state. We just don't buy that kind of Washington bunk.
Thank you so much. And I would like to transition for a little while to some of our audience has asked some questions. I would like to get as many of these in as possible. First, we have had a question from the Springfield News Leader for Dr. Onder specifically. Sir, if you don't mind weighing in. News Leader Austin Hugule, I am so sorry, Austin, if I've ruined your last name. But Austin has asked of the newsletter, can we get a cite on Senator Onder's statement that expansion enrollees will be pushed off private insurance?
Oh, yeah, that's, well, two things. My main cite is the Affordable Care Act. So the part of the Affordable Care Act that mandates that companies cover with more than 50 employees cover their enrollees, it says that if the employer wants, he can offer a so-called skinny plan, which is usually a pretty lousy plan with a very high deductible. He can pay a penalty, and then he can dump his employees on to the Affordable Care Act. Basically, he creates such a lousy plan that his employees don't take the private insurance he's offering. They pick Medicaid instead. And then it is also a fact that those who are on Obamacare exchange plans are forced off of their insurance. They will lose their subsidies and be forced off of their exchange plan if they are eligible for Medicaid. Again, my site there is the Affordable Care Act itself.
Thank you, Dr. Onder. Mr. Edwards, this question was not for you. Would you like to weigh in on it nonetheless?
I don't have an opinion against what the question says. So I'll just let it be that.
Well, I would like to, we have a couple MVPs of this chat. Sharon has asked several great questions. I did want to, this is a question several people have asked, and I want to be sure that we understand. They're asking generally how the funding for this works. Mr. Edwards, perhaps you could explain how the funding for this particular proposition works.
Yeah, so I'll do my best. So right now, Medicaid is a match program. So it's a federal state match. In theory, for every 50 cents the state puts forward, the feds match it. Actually, the way it works in Missouri, hospitals tax themselves to make that match more attractive from a federal perspective. So from a state budget perspective, it's often quoted as 40% of the budget. It's really about 15% of the budget because of the amount of money the hospitals put in. So the feds would, instead of matching it 50-50 or 65-35, they'd match it 90%. In the earliest years of this, it was a 100% match, and it was staged to go down to 90%. So it's a federal match, 90%. Again, the money we are already taxing, the ACA taxes went into place, have been in effect. Missourians are paying that taxes, and we're turning that money down. And so while I consider myself a fiscal conservative, the most important thing is that when we tax ourselves, we get something in return. And our state's chosen not to get anything in return. So we have to make up that 10%. And as I've said earlier, I think that 10% is made up by savings that we can find in the program and the economic development and economic impact of this.
The question was not necessarily directed to you, Dr. Onder, but would you like to weigh in?
Yeah, so once again, this this touches on it is true that the traditional plan in Missouri, Missouri budget numbers, about 65% of the Medicaid budget is provided by the federal government, 35% by the state. But there are some accounting gimmicks that are played with the so-called FRA tax that the hospitals ask to have reauthorized every year. But this 10% is real money. It is $350 million. You can pay a couple of eggheads at Wash U to make up some numbers and pretend that the money's going to grow on trees and that it's going to fall out of the sky. And of course, there's always economic stimulus to any any money that's infused into an economy. But you've got to look at the other side of the equation, is that when you take that money out of Missouri's economy, when you take it out of roads and bridges or higher ed or K through 12 education, it's going to have a negative stimulatory effect. So we really cannot afford, in these tough budget times, it's going to be a minimum of 350. With the COVID financial crisis, it's probably going to be more than $350 million, a lot more than $350 million to expand this Obamacare program. And Missourians just cannot afford it.
I would like to get another follower question for Dr. Onder. This one is from Jennifer Moore with KSMU, which is great. Question, for several years, she's interviewed lower income patients in the Ozarks who work full-time hourly jobs, but the jobs don't provide health insurance. If they don't have children or disability, they usually don't qualify for Medicaid, even if they are very low income. What do you propose these individuals who don't qualify for Medicaid pay for their health care?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of good question. There are a lot of options there right now. For instance, if that person is at makes an income of 100% of the federal poverty level, that person qualifies for a 100% subsidy on the Affordable Care Act exchanges, and it goes down from there, down all the way up to 400% of the federal poverty level. If one makes up to 250% of the federal poverty level, one is eligible for cost share reductions or CSR payments, which reduce a person's out-of-pocket expenses for health care. So I really believe that part of the Affordable Care Act that helps people to get private insurance is the better part, as opposed to putting someone on a dysfunctional government program. And then, of course, many people in working these lower income jobs, right now they do have insurance from their employer. It's better that they keep that insurance rather than that they be forced off onto a government program.
Mr. Edwards, that question was not directed to you, but would you like to weigh in on the subject?
Yeah, I would just like to augment it slightly. So really the group we're talking about, because the Affordable Care Act has subsidies at 138% of poverty level, there is a hole in the program, and Medicaid was designed to fill that hole part of the Affordable Care Act. So the hole is between 21% of the poverty line and 138%. So that young woman who shows up in the ER, who makes $4,500 a year for a family of three, makes too much to qualify for Medicaid and not enough to qualify for the Affordable Care Act subsidies. So it's that gap between 21% and 138% of the poverty line where we can help these people. These are working poor people. They're the people Jennifer Moore mentioned, the ones that we see in our ER. Probably 10% of our patients show up in our ER with no insurance in this part of the country. And we know that they could access the insurance through this Medicaid program. And again, it's that $4,500 a year. That's $375 a month. That's not enough to get by on.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. We have a reader question asking us to clarify something that was mentioned earlier. What is this is from Jean. Thank you, Jean, for a couple good questions. What is disparate share amount, and how will that be impacted by Medicaid expansion?
So I'll try to answer that. I'll reference our Branson, Missouri hospital. So disproportionate share is federal funding that goes to hospitals that take care of more than their share of the uninsured and Medicaid population, but it's based on Medicaid population. So for example, our Branson hospital has a lot of poverty, a lot of temporary workers that don't have insurance. And we don't qualify for that, even though our uninsured rate is far higher than some of these city hospitals that Senator Onder mentioned, because the disproportionate share is calculated based on your Medicaid proportion of patients. So since we don't have Medicaid expansion, we don't qualify. Many of our hospitals don't qualify for that. So we leave further federal dollars on the table, federal dollars that states like Arkansas and 37 other states do get.
Dr. Onder, would you like to weigh in on that?
Scaling back on the so-called dish payments, disproportionate share payments, was part of the Affordable Care Act, and it was something that hospitals accepted in the negotiations leading up to the passage of the ACA in 2010, because hospitals saw that they could dramatically reduce the amount of charity care they do if we expanded Medicaid. So hospitals are given a generous tax subsidy because they say they're going to do charity care. You know, I do charity care. Every doctor I know does charity care. It's just that we don't go to the people and we don't spend $7 million to try to get the voters of the state of Missouri to ransom our children's future in order to improve our bottom line. We do charity care for charity. So I think there's a reason the hospitals and the dark money groups out of DC are spending $7 million to try to push this ballot initiative. But Missouri taxpayers ultimately are going to be paying the cost.
Staying with you, and thank you so much, Dr. Onder. Staying with you, and this is a question for both of you, and we'll give Dr. Onder first crack at it. This is a question from Gene. Do you consider healthcare to be a right or a privilege?
Sure. Well, I think there are many goods in this world, but our system of government is a system of negative rights. We have a right to free speech. We have a right to peaceably assemble. We have a right to petition the government for redress of grievances. We have a right to equal protection under the law. But the problem is when you start calling positive goods rights, then what you're saying is there's a right to take from someone else in order to give you the things that you want or need. And I think that's a dangerous path to go down. But I think what we do want to do to protect everyone in our society, the employers and job creators and the poor people who rely on our public benefits, to make the system as good as we possibly can. And remember, Missouri is very generous to moms and kids. We cover children up to 305% of the federal poverty level, $78,600 for a family of four. We cover pregnant women up to 201% of the federal poverty level. Missouri has nothing to be ashamed of or to apologize for in how we treat the most vulnerable. The question is whether we're going to kick able-bodied working age adults off of their private insurance in order to put them on a government program.
Thank you so much, Dr. Onder. Mr. Edwards, same question. Once again, Gene has asked, do you consider healthcare to be a right or a privilege?
Yeah, so first I would comment that we're not doing better than other states. 76% of the states have expanded Medicaid, and that means they're taking better care of the vulnerable. I had this very question brought to me in my first week of graduate school. Is it a right or a privilege? Many years ago. And I'm gonna answer it the very same way. On the one hand, I see it as a right. On the other hand, I see privilege in it. I was born to privilege. I've never worried on a day in my life about having insurance, about having food on my table. And so I'm going to choose that it's neither one. It's an obligation of conscience. It's an obligation I think I have to serve our community. It's an obligation our physicians have. And so I'm going to choose an answer, the third answer. It's an obligation of our conscience.
Thank you so much, Mr. Edwards. This is a question I would like to relay to both of you. We'll start off with Mr. Edwards. How has, we are not considering this issue in a vacuum. Not right now, we're not. Not in 2020, we're not. Of course, we have a pandemic that we're struggling with right now. How has COVID-19, how has this altered your perception of this issue in any way, if it has?
Well, I think my introductory comment, quoting Brent Schaefer, reflects that. I have never appreciated how important health insurance and our economy is together. And we've certainly seen that. We've seen as our hospitals had to shut down. We've seen how we've tried to protect our community, what it's done to our economy. We know that we have a disease spread that in many places, and in Missouri, for example, in part of the South, it's rapidly growing out of control. The two go hand in glove in ways I didn't appreciate really before my whole career in healthcare. If we don't care for our most vulnerable, this disease spreads. That hairdresser who's worried about losing their job, who maybe have some symptoms, who shows up to work to pay her bills, and then exposes 70 people to a disease, that affects all of us. And so I see this intersection between public health and the economy like never before. And in that intersection, I think we have an opportunity in Medicaid expansion to both help our economy and help our most vulnerable citizens.
Thank you so much, sir. Dr. Onder, would you like to weigh in on this question? Because again, we are in the middle of a COVID-19 pandemic. How has it altered your perception on this issue, if at all?
Sure, yeah, it really has. This is an unprecedented time. It was really an unprecedented thing that we shut down our whole economy. We essentially put our whole society under house arrest to contain a pandemic, and it has had enormous economic consequences that I don't think we will fully appreciate for months to come. Being in the Missouri legislature, we are responsible for balancing the state books. We do not have a printing press like they do in Washington, D.C. And I think if there was ever a time to recklessly spend $350 million or likely much more on expansion of a dysfunctional government program, this is the last time we ought to do it. Yes, the COVID pandemic and the healthcare system obviously are closely intertwined. I think what we've probably learned the most from the pandemic is the importance of protecting our frail elderly people in nursing homes. If you look in Missouri right now, we're still seeing an increase of COVID-19 cases, but the death rate has followed a bell-shaped curve, and we're way on the down end of the bell-shaped curve. Why is that? Why can we have more cases and have fewer deaths? It is because we're doing a better job of protecting our elderly in the nursing homes. The states that had the most deaths from COVID-19 were those who forced active COVID cases into the emergency room, and obviously that was very bad.
Thank you so much, Dr. Onder. We have one more question before we go to our closing statements. I ask that you take 60 seconds maximum for this question. We'll start with Dr. Onder. What is something you wish the audience we're listening to knew more about regarding this issue? What questions are we not asking that we should be?
Yes. I think the questions we're not asking are that what is it going to cost? I think we have a $7 million campaign. We have a lot of establishment sources saying, oh, this is a great thing. It's free money. It's free federal money. It's going to grow on trees. I think we've got to ask ourselves, where's the money going to come from? I think that's being asked far too little. We can take care of our poor people within the existing system. But when we have to cut $350 million out of the state budget, we're going to have to cut roads, K-12 education, colleges, law enforcement, public safety. And we just cannot afford this reckless expansion known as Amendment 2.
Mr. Edwards, same question. What questions are we not asking? What are we not thinking about that you would argue we should be?
You know, just a bit of a rebuttal as we begin is, when you're in an ER and you're taking care of a vulnerable population, you don't tell them we can't care for you because we want to build a new bridge or build a new road. I get how that helps economic development. That's a question that I can't answer to a vulnerable person. So the real question I have is, why is it that 37 states have made this work? 37 states have continued this. Not a single state has moved away from it. What's wrong with our state, our leadership, that we're so afraid to make something happen that has worked in 37 other states? And I'll assure you, by the time this is over, we will not be the last state to amend or add this expansion to the roles of states that have done it. So that's my question. Why can't we do it?
Thank you so much. And we're going to stay with you, Mr. Edwards. We are on our closing statements. We will ask, due to the fantastic questions we received, that you instead take a minute and a half for your closing statements instead of a full 2 minutes. Mr. Edwards, the floor is yours for your closing statement.
Okay. We live in a representative democracy, but this amendment is for the people. It's the purest expression of democracy. every Missourian, every eligible voter gets a vote. That means the poorest Missourian's vote is equal to the richest. It means my 89-year-old mom's vote is equal to the vote of a state senator. And by the way, Senator Onder, my mom's going to cancel out your vote. This is democracy. By supporting this, we can improve the health and the economy of our state at a very critical time. I love that we'll find out on August 4th what our state believes, what our citizens want. It's the purest form of democracy.
Thank you so much, Mr. Edwards. Dr. Onder, your closing statement. Once again, 90 seconds instead of 2 full minutes.
Thank you. I think this has been a great debate tonight. Thank you for inviting me. As Missouri voters go to the polls on August 4th, we need to look at this hoax known as Amendment 2, and we need to ask ourselves, do we want to go further down the road toward Nancy Pelosi, Bernie Sanders' dreams of nationalized healthcare by expanding a dysfunctional government program? We have to ask ourselves, where is the money coming from? It's not a matter of doing healthcare instead of roads. Conservatively, this is going to cost $3.5 billion over the next decade. Missouri does not have a printing press like the federal government. We are hard-pressed to pay our bills. If we want to continue to have roads and bridges and K-12 education and higher ed and law enforcement, we need to balance the budget and be responsible. Welfare expansion money does not grow on trees. It does not pay for itself. The reason states have not reversed their Medicaid expansion is not because it hasn't resulted in massive cost overruns. It has. It's because very powerful special interests, multimillionaire hospital CEOs, multimillionaire CEOs at corporations who want to dump their workers' health care on the taxpayer. They have kept us trapped in this dysfunctional government program known as Obamacare Medicaid expansion. Missouri cannot afford Amendment 2. We don't want to double down on a dysfunctional program. I urge you to vote no on Amendment 2.
Thank you to our participants. And before we let you go, I just want to be clear that we understand that this forum was recorded and it will be posted to these websites, KMSU or KSMU.org, thelibrary.org, and leadershipspringfield.org/blog. Once again, no part of this video may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic or mechanical, without the written permission of the copyright holder. Copyright 2020 by Leadership Springfield, all rights reserved. And once again, I do want to remind you, we have a primary election on Tuesday, August 4th. Please remember to vote. And of course, vote again in November. Vote at every opportunity. And last thing I want to stress so much, thank you on behalf of all of us citizenry who get to benefit from your perspectives to our two participants, Mr. Steve Edwards and Dr. Bob Onder, for providing their perspectives and taking part in this forum and sharing their views with the public. This is very hard work being a part of a campaign and being part of our democracy. And we want you to remind you, please support your position, and whatever position ends up taking the day, please keep the dialogue open. And at the very least, folks, thank you so much for taking the time and speaking with us today. And one last time, thank you so much for you two for taking part.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a special broadcast of a forum featuring the arguments for and against expanding Medicaid, which will appear on the August 4th primary election ballot in Missouri.